I'm saying there are some words that worm their way into the English language that represent, a product or a concept area. One such word is Kleenex, which comes to represent all paper tissues. You may not actually use Kleenex, but it has come to mean any paper tissue. Some of the words are taken on new meanings, such as double-double and Tim's. Don't worry, this is not a sermon about Tim's or Kleenex. It's about another word that's come into the English language. Sodom. Oh. Before 1980, sodomy was a legal term that to represent a criminal offence. It meant any unnatural sexual activity. A more modern twist has now been given to the word sodom and sodomy. It's a person called J. Michelson, currently a PhD student in Jewish thought at Hebrew University, points out, "The Bible condemns many things in the story of Sodom. Lack of hospitality, humiliation of fellow human beings, brutality and violence towards others, pride, decadence, serious breach of human ethical obligations. But homosexuality is not one of them." That's not exactly what the Bible says, although he is quoting a verse which I shall read later. It's what he misses out that matters. However, God's word does not support that interpretation. In Genesis 19, "But before the angels lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house around, both old and young, all the people from every quarter. And they called upon Lot and said to him, 'Where are the men which came into thee this night? Bring them out unto us, that we may know them.'" And you will know from other scriptures that know in this context is a sexual practice. "And Lot went out at the door unto them and shut the door after him and said, 'I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly.'" Lot understood what they wanted. "Behold, now I have two daughters who have not known man. Let me, I pray you, bring them out to you, and do ye to them as good in your eyes. Only unto these men do nothing, for therefore there came they under the shadow of my roof. Here is the hospitality issue. So we'll come back to that scripture and make some comments on it. But what lessons can we learn from what happened to Sodom and from Abraham's and Lot's actions and reactions? We first hear about Sodom in Genesis 13. Genesis 13, there was a conflict between Lot was a nephew of Abraham, and there was a conflict between Lot's herdsmen and Abraham's herdsmen. The land was not big enough for both of them. So in that's mentioned in verses 5 to 7. So in verse 8, we see the character of Abraham. "So Abraham said to Lot, 'Please let there be no strife between you and me and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take the left, then I will take the right. If you go to the right, then I will go to the left.'" This is remarkable because Abraham, as head of the clan, or the family, the enlarged family, had the right to make the decision. And Lot would have had to abide by it in traditional culture. But here, Abraham was willing to let Lot decide. He was willing to let Lot make the decision. So, in verse 10 it says, Lot lifted up his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. It was well watered like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go towards Zoar. So he chose the plain, but there's a sting in the tail to this in verse 13. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked, and Lot pitched his tent even as far as Sodom, but the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord, it says. So we see Abraham let Lot choose that land because it was very fertile with the waters of the Jordan River going into that area. But so we go now to chapter 14 of Genesis. And verse 1. And it seems that the cities of Sodom and the Gomorrah and a couple of others were in an alliance, but they were subject to the king of Elam. I don't want to try to pronounce his name, but he was king of Elam, and he actually ruled over the whole area of the Euphrates Valley. So they were subject to him. And it says in verse 4, 12 years they served this man, and in the 13th year they rebelled. And in the 14th, there was a great battle, and the king of Sodom lost, and his army lost. And in verse 13 and 14, verse 11, then they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their provisions and went their way. They also took Lot, Abraham's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. So Lot lost everything, having chosen this area. But when it was told Abraham, he took action. And Abraham had a sort of alliance with the Amorites. It says in verse 13, then one who had escaped came and told Abraham the Hebrew, for he dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol and brother of Anah, and they were allies with Abraham. So he'd made peace and alliance with the local people. And when Abraham heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained servants who were born in his house and went in pursuit as far as Dan. That may not seem too many these days, but you've got to remember this is only about 300 years since the flood. And there weren't that many people around. The cities were fairly small, and people were only able to muster a few thousand people as armies. Anyway, Abraham and his army followed the kings all the way. He was in the southern part of Israel. They followed them all the way beyond Dan, which was what became the northern part of Israel, into what is now Syria. And that's where they actually caught up with them. So it was several days' travel, this was. And he devised a clever strategy, which in some ways was very similar to what Gideon did. He attacked at night from two different directions. And obviously the king's armies would have been weary, and they wouldn't have been expecting an attack, since they defeated the kings in the Israel, in the area of the promised land. So between the time of Lot's departure from being with Abraham and this war of the kings. God had promised Abraham the whole land. God was starting to fulfill his promise, driving out the first invaders. And this, remember, Genesis and to Deuteronomy were written by Moses in the wilderness for the Israelites to read before they entered the promised land. So this was a lesson to the Israelites going into the promised land, that God was with them, that he would deal with their enemies. And in verse 17, Abraham returned and he met the king of Sodom, and he also met Melchizedek, which is mentioned in verse 18. And you have to go to Hebrews 7, verse 1 to 3, to find out that this Melchizedek was the early manifestation of the Son of God, Christ. This appears to be some sort of Passover service, because he said in verse 18, then Melchizedek, king of Salem, which means peace, brought out bread and wine. He was the priest of God Most High, and he blessed him and said, Blessed be Abraham of God Most High. So this was all done in the presence of the king of Sodom. And also Abraham paid tithes at this point. And this was a witness, as I say, this was a witness to the king of Sodom, and the witness that of the position of Abraham with God. And in verse 21 to 24, you'll find the king of Sodom offered Abraham all the possessions. He just wanted the people. But Abraham refused anything. So that was the end of that encounter. Now, when did this happen? We know Abraham left his homeland at age 75. He wandered around for a while, and at one point he went down to Egypt. Then Lot separated from Abraham after he returned. This could have taken several years. And in Genesis 15, we have a renewal of the covenant. In Genesis 16, we have an account of the birth of Ishmael. And in Genesis 16, verse 16, we find at that time, Abraham was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to Abraham. So we know the witness to Sodom was before Abraham became 86, between the ages of 75 and 86. And in chapter 17, in verse 1, he says, we go another period of time, and he's now 99. So that's 13 years after 86, on my maths. But, so it would appear that the king of Sodom had seen the witness of Abraham and Melchizedek, between 13 and 20 years. And also Lot had been living there for that period of time as a witness. We know that because over in Second Peter 2, verse 7 and 8, it says, breaking into the contract context, you talk about verse 6, destroying the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, says, and delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the wicked conduct of, by the filthy conduct of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. So he was a witness for up to 20 years before it was destroyed. So God gave them plenty of warning, plenty of time to change. And in, we now go to Genesis 18. And Abraham is sitting in the door of his tent when he sees three people coming. And you read in the early chart of part of Genesis 18 that he was immediately showing them hospitality. He actually went out and slaughtered a calf, which was a big thing. So he considered them a very, very important people to slaughter a calf. And when they inquired about Sarah, which is mentioned in verses 9 to 15, he realized who they really were. And at verse 16, after they'd eaten, they went towards Sodom, and Abraham went with them for a short distance. And you see in verse 17, the Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I am doing? Since Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. For I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of the Lord to do justice and righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him." So because Abraham was faithful and obedient, God told Abraham why he was there. And he says in verse 20, "And the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grave, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to their outcry against it that has come to me. And if not, I will know." God had heard the accounts. He'd heard the complaints. He probably heard Lot's prayers. But he came down to check. He didn't go on hearsay. He came to get the facts. God does not judge on hearsay. He does investigate and checks them out. And then we have this incident between verses 23 and 32 in which Abraham pleaded with God, not for the sinners in the two cities, but for the righteous people who might be in them. He pleaded that the cities be spared from destruction, and that Abraham started to negotiate with God about the number of righteous people there could be in Sodom and Gomorrah, and whether God would destroy them if there were only 50, all the way down to 10. So Abraham recognized all the way through that he was only dust to God, and pleaded with God not to become angry. Abraham appealed to God's righteousness for the righteous people who might still be in Sodom and Gomorrah, asking for mercy consequently on the sinners. You know, it would appear, as it turned out, that only Lot was a righteous person. We're not sure that his wife was, or his daughters. Would God save the cities because of Lot? And in fact, at the end time, this world will be saved ultimately because of the righteousness of the saints. I think it's mentioned in Matthew 24. This shows that we can talk and plead with God. Christ illustrated this in the parable of the unjust judge. Remember the woman who was wrongfully used and came to the unjust judge. It's mentioned in Luke 18, starting in verse 1. And she pleaded with him, and she kept pleading with him till he got fed up, and he decided to respond. So God doesn't get fed up, but we can plead with God in prayer on issues that do concern us. And in Ezekiel 18, verse 23, says, God says, "Do I have any pleasure at all that the wicked should die, says the Lord, and not that he should turn away from his ways and live?" So God is not vindictive. God is willing to change his mind if a nation changes and repents. That's found in Jeremiah 18. Verse 7 to 8. "The instant I speak concerning a nation and concerning a kingdom, to pluck it up, to pull down and to destroy it, if that nation against whom I have spoken turns from its evil, I will relent of the disaster that I thought to bring upon it." So God is perfectly willing to change. And the book of... can't remember the man who's got swallowed by the fish. Jonah, yes, the book of Jonah is a perfect example of this. So anyway, when Abraham got down to 10 people, he stopped negotiating, and the angels went to the city. Chapter 19, verse 1. "Now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face towards the ground." Now there's two interesting things about this. It was evening, so the gates were about to be shut. When you had a walled city, you closed the gates at sunset to secure the city. And the second thing, he was sitting in the gate, and this was the place in ancient times where the justice was dispensed, where business was transacted just in front of the gate. So he was an important person, and possibly he was a judge. You'll see from Ruth 4:1 is an example of where Boaz goes to the leaders of the community at the gate to discuss about Ruth in Ruth 4:1. So, Lot, knowing what the situation was in this city, knew they were prepared to sleep out in the streets. And knowing what the situation was in the city, he urged them vehemently. It says in verse 3, he insisted strongly, so they turned into him and entered his house. Then he made a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate it. Makes you wonder whether it was Passover time. Anyway, so this is where the mob surrounds the house, calling for Lot to bring the angels out. And Lot had this tradition, as Abraham did, that whoever came to his house was under his protection. This is still a very strong belief in the Middle East today, even today. Or it certainly was in the 19th century when the visitors were there. And if a person came to your house, they were to be protected even to the extent of your life. You were responsible for them. So that's why Lot went out and pleaded with them. And in verse 8 he says, "Now I have two daughters." Lot was plainly wrong here. But he was a righteous man under pressure. and a righteous man under pressure can make mistakes. The Bible said Lot was righteous. It didn't say he was perfect. God deals with people who are fallible, who are human, who make mistakes. You'll find virtually all the leaders that God has used have made mistakes in one way or another. King David is a classic example, but he was a man after God's own heart, yet he made mistakes. So we have to give a bit of understanding for Lot. Also, he was being corrupted by his surroundings. Paul warns us in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33. Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. And he'd lived there up to 20 years in an evil society. So the angels had to rescue Lot from this situation. And obviously they couldn't go anywhere with the gates shut. So come the morning, he wants to go and warn his sons-in-laws. It says in verse 12, then the men said to Lot, have you anyone else here, son-in-law, your sons, your daughters, and whomever you have in the city? Take them out of this place, for we will destroy this place, because the outcry against them has grown great before the face of the Lord. The Lord has sent us to destroy it. So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law, who had married his daughters, and said, Get up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But to his sons-in-law, he seemed to be joking. So no one took him seriously. There's a parallel, of course, with Noah, because obviously Noah had warned people of what's coming, and nobody took any notice of him either. Yet, despite this, in verse 15, the gates would have been open at dawn, and the angels urged Lot to hurry. And it says he still lingered. He was very reluctant to leave. He was obviously very attached, not to the practices of the people, but to his wealth and his prosperity. He and his family had to be dragged out of the city. And even then, when he got out of the city, he was still negotiating in verses 18 to 23 about, they wanted him to flee to the mountains. He said, no, he wants to go to this little city. So he was still reluctant and negotiating. In verse 24, finally, he goes to the city and the whole place, fire and brimstone rains down on Sodom and Gomorrah. And this is what it looks like today. If you go there, it's absolutely barren. There's no grass, nothing growing. And it's not only full of salt, but chemicals. There's a big potash industry there. And apparently the Egyptians got ash filth from there for their mummies. So this was a total disaster. But in verse 26, Lot's wife, who would have been walking behind him in that tradition, would have been walking behind him, and she looked back. She just didn't look back. She hankered for what was gone, because she would have been obviously desiring the way of life, the friends, the prosperity, the luxury they enjoyed. And it says in verse
Ezekiel 16 is the verse that gentleman and I quoted at the beginning was referring to, and we'll read it now. Ezekiel 16. Ezekiel 16, verse 49 to 50. Talking about Israel at this point, Ezekiel wrote around the time of the captivity of Judah. And he says, look, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. She and her daughter had pride, fullness of food, and abundance of idleness. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. And they were haughty. But he also says that they committed abominations before me. Therefore I took them away as I saw fit. So actually Judah was compared to Sodom at this point. Lot's wife could not give up her friends and the great life she had. And they'd lost the close connection with God. There were good things as well as evil things in that society, just like the tree of good and evil. And in verse 27, Abraham was a distant witness of these events. As I say, he was to the south and he could see these things in the distance, the smoke and the flames. Verse 27, Abraham went early in the morning to the place where he had stood before the Lord. Then he looked towards Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the plain, and he saw and behold the smoke of the land, which went up like the smoke of a furnace. And it says that in verse 29, God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot had dwelt. So Lot was terrified to stay in Zoar, this little city, so he fled to the mountains with his daughters. He still didn't fully trust God. And he got drunk like Moses, like Noah. His daughters gave him drink and he got drunk like Noah, probably from depression and fear. He'd lost his wife. And everything, all his possessions. So his daughters, in the verse 31, now the firstborn said to the younger, our father is old and there is no man on the earth to come into us, as is the custom of all the earth. So they obviously thought it was the end time, that everything had been destroyed. His daughters had been affected by their thinking, being in Sodom. And as a result, they had children by Lot. But eventually, the good news is that Lot's line was brought into the line of promise through Ruth. Ruth was one of their descendants. Sodom became a symbol of or type of God's destruction of wickedness. Israel, I read in Ezekiel 16, was compared to Sodom. And in Luke 17, Christ uses Sodom as an example. Luke 17, verses 26 to 30. And as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. They ate, they drank, they married wives. They were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. Likewise, as it was also in the days of Lot, They ate and they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they built. But on the day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from the heaven and destroyed them all. Verse 30, even so it will be in the day that the Son of Man is revealed.
The Christ return, it's going to be a similar sort of sudden disaster. So this was the end of Sodom and Gomorrah, or is it? Go back to Ezekiel 16, and there's a hint here of something else. Ezekiel 16, verse 55. And when your sister Sodom and her daughters return to their former state, and Samaria and her daughters refer to their former state, then you and your daughters will return to your former state. So Sodom would come back, and Christ expands on this in Matthew 10. Matthew 10 verse 15. He's talking about the towns that his apostles visited as witnesses in the area of Judea and Galilee. And he says in verse 15, assuredly, I say to you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. And over in Matthew 11, verse 22, but I say it will be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon in the day of judgment than you. And you, Capernaum, who are exalted to heaven, will be brought down to Hades. For if the mighty works which were done in you had been done in Sodom, it would have remained until this day. But I say to you that it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom in the day of judgment than you. There's going to be a judgment, which is, we call the second resurrection, when all the peoples of different eras will rise to be judged, including the people of Sodom. So the fact that they lost their lives because of sin does not mean the end of their hope. They have hope of the judgment and mercy of God in the second resurrection. That is the important lesson for the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. For us, we need to heed the warning of Sodom and Gomorrah and resist the influence of this society.